So you always want to be prepared to...
to set goals.
To be really disruptive.
Diversity is fundamental.
It is just trusting those super strengths.
To recover from those failures and learn from them.
Humility looks like the softest word, but it's kind of the hardest.
We ourselves are in beta mode.
Life goes on.
Sporting Edge, inside the mind of champions.
Welcome to the Inside the Mind of Champions podcast. My name is Jeremy Snape. I'm a former England cricketer with a master's degree in sports psychology. Since retiring, I've been fortunate to work with and interview some of the world's most successful thinkers and performers, and I'm passionate about translating their habits and routines into practical strategies to help you become more successful. In each episode, I'll be dissecting a common performance challenge to help you improve your mindset, your leadership, and your team performance. To me, our mindset is the next frontier, so let's find out why. Hello and welcome to today's episode of Inside the Mind of Champions. I hope you, your family, and your business have had a great few weeks since we were last together. Before we start today, I just wanted to give a quick shout out and thank PDRT666 for your very kind 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. I'm so glad you're finding these expert insights inspirational and also the strategies really useful during this challenging time. I really appreciate you taking that extra 60 seconds to write that note because it really helps people who are browsing through all the thousands of podcasts on these platforms to signpost and understand the key takeaways and style before they listen in or subscribe. So thanks so much for doing that. And I guess that reflects back to my aim, which is to provide you with a glimpse inside the mind of these amazing people that I've had the privilege to work with and meet and interview, but also to package it in a way that makes sense for you as a student or a sports coach or an entrepreneur or an executive or even maybe a senior leader in a multinational business. For today's show, I'm going to do something a little bit different. In every episode so far, I've taken a particular topic and showcased lots of diverse insights from sport or the military or academia or business across that particular theme. But I've been requested to try a different format as well, just as an idea. So I'm going to try that today. So in today's episode, I'm going to dive in more depth down one of the interviews that we've done, and I'm going to call this style of podcast the Mastermind Session. And for my cricket lovers in my network, you're going to absolutely love it. But don't worry if you're not a cricket fan or you don't understand cricket. I know we've got people tuning in from all over the world, and cricket isn't the biggest sensation over there. So there are so many life and business lessons packed into this interview that I know you're going to absolutely love. So here's a taster from today's guest.
All your life, you have dreamt of being in this position to become a cricketer, you know. I just totally felt overawed, overpowered with everything that I was seeing around me. I've always put it in a much harsher way. It's like being in the bunkers and you are in war. There's always ways and means of winning.
With cricket being off the agenda during the pandemic, the West Indies cricket team have made the decision to come up and play in the UK in the first test match of the summer. The games are being played in a biosecure stadium with no crowds, and I really, really hope that the series goes well so that we can emerge safely from the lockdown and get domestic and recreational cricket back on track this season. So while we wait for the season to restart, I hope you enjoyed today's Mastermind Session with one of the greatest players of all time, Viv Richards. Viv was an inspiration to me as a youngster. How many of us tried to stand like him and swagger like him when we were batting in our playgrounds or gardens? I did manage to play against him just before he retired. But then a few years ago, I had the dream come true to meet the legend himself as part of Shane Warne and Greg Shepherd's coaching team at the Melbourne Stars in Australia. He is the kind of guy who walks into the room and everything stops. His swagger and his presence is only bettered by his voice, which sort of bounds around the room. And it sounds like he should have had a career as a Hollywood voiceover artist doing all the film trailers. But spending time with Viv was an absolute privilege through that period. And what fascinated me was, even though he was one of the most iconic players of all time, he let the players come to him. He didn't say a huge amount. He listened intently to what these young players were battling with and the questions that they'd got. And when he spoke, it was absolute gold dust. And as the weeks progressed, I finally plucked up the courage to ask him if he'd share his life story and his insights with me. I'm so glad that he did. So here you go. We're going to go inside the mind of a true champion. Sir Isaac Vivian Alexander Richards was born on the 7th of March 1952 on the beautiful island of Antigua in the West Indies. His parents, Malcolm and Gretel, lived in the district of St. John's, and Viv had two brothers who, like their father, also loved cricket. They all played representative cricket, but definitely not on Sundays. This was a very religious family, and Sundays were dominated by church services, and young Viv was singing in the choir. This is where he learned some of his core values, and they would serve him well in his later years. Let's hear the first insight from Viv about those early years of his life.
I guess when you have a father who played himself and played for the country, you know, as kids, you're always pretty much curious and idle of such and such ways in those early days that we take the gear up and, you know, you try to put the pads on at times. Sometimes they were as big as you itself, you know, and the bat. And, you know, you just fiddle around with these little things. And especially if you have a father who's pretty keen on the game itself, you know, because I had two elder brothers, you know, who also played. And the attention that my father played in their progression and from that club stage, from the neighborhood to the club stage and onto maybe playing for the country. And one actually also went on to play for the Leeward Islands. So I guess our dad had a huge role to play with that progression.
So it's a lovely image of the young Viv Richards standing next to his dad on the edge of the cricket field, trying on these oversized pads, maybe coming up to his chest at the side of the field. And this is where the dream ignites. A family who love cricket, they're immersed in cricket, their social network is based around cricket and the church. And this wonderful older role model in his dad and his brothers who are showing Viv the way. Little did they know at that time how far he would really go. So in that first insight, you can hear Viv's respect for his dad, who was ultra competitive as a bowler on the field, but also he was the governor of the local prison. He was a strict disciplinarian, while his mum was the calm peacemaker in the household. I was interested to hear how Viv reflects on those formative influences.
Well, it was great to have someone like that, you know, who had serious discipline in mind, you know, and especially and it's at home, you know, some of the kids used to maybe kid us a lot and about, you know, your dad and who he is, and we had to make sure that everything was in place, you know, because he was an individual's no-nonsense sort of guy. And I guess when you have a father like that who worked around maybe serious criminals and sometimes maybe could at times bring some of that discipline from the prison home. You know, at the time you felt, wow, this is harsh. But, you know, when you would have progressed in life and the stages that your life would have taken you to, the journeys and all that sort of stuff, you see how right they were, you know. And you could always pat them at that stage, in that final stage of your life, knowing the path that they would have directed you through, knowing that it was all for the good. And you appreciate that after. But at that time, you always felt it was a little harsh, you know. But in the end, you were around long enough to find out that discipline in any form, way of life, it's pretty crucial.
So imagine growing up with your dad as a prison warden and making sure there was that no-nonsense approach. So I'm sure Viv didn't get away with much mischief as a youngster. But on top of that passion that he'd got for being part of that cricketing family and that cricketing community, we're now adding this layer of respect and discipline. And we'll come back to this later in Viv's story, because even though he's one of the most destructive batsmen in the world, this attribute would play a key role in his success. As Viv grew up, he became renowned as a rising star in the district and across the island. And at 17 years old, he had a chance to play for Antigua in the Leeward Islands Trophy. And his debut didn't go as he hoped. He went out to bat and he was out first ball in front of 6,000 local passionate fans who actually ran riot across the pitch with the umpire's decision. So they overturned this decision. They said they were going to kick off if they didn't see their local hero bat. So they gave Viv the strange chance to bat again. And he failed again, which caused lots of animosity in the crowd that went full circle. So it was a turbulent time for Viv as he started, and definitely a baptism of fire. But one of his local cricketing heroes and mentors, Andy Roberts, the West Indies fast bowler, paved the way for Viv to represent the West Indies. And now the selectors were starting to look at the smaller islands, and Viv was definitely on their radar. The turbulence in Viv's early career continued when he visited England on a trial. Once again, his dreams were shattered as the decision makers shook their heads as he tried to impress them with his batting in the Surrey Nets in that early trial opportunity.
If I can maybe just run you through some of the stuff which was pretty hurting at the time, because, you know, here you have two young men from Antigua and Barbuda. All your life, you have dreamt of being in this position to become a cricketer. You know, the heroes that you had in the past, and being in the environment where all the individuals, you know, who matters, are going to be having a look to see whether you progress or not. And I guess at that time we were at Surrey, in the indoor nets. I can remember some of the guys that we had then in the olden days, the Inti Kavalams and the Howards, I think, from New Zealand. You had Longsdale, Skinner. You had Yunis Amin, a whole lot of guys, you know, who at that time, I think Alan Butcher was there at that particular time as well, too. So, when you are in the nets and you're facing an individual, you know, like Andy Roberts, you know, who is also looking to make that progress in life, it's hard. And he was coming hard in the nets, and you're trying your best, and you can only look at the individual who are going to maybe decide your future, having a nod in the back and, like, not approve of what they are actually seeing. And it's hurting, you know. And I guess at that time we were rejected. I guess you may say at times some folks, you know, who are looking to make that progress, sometimes you have to be in the right place at the right time sometimes. And it's so wrong where some of these things matters, you know. And I can remember Andy had us to go up to Hampshire to have a trial. Hampshire maybe had some wiser folks, you know, then decided, well, we're going to grab it. And we all knew what he accomplished at Hampshire. He had some marvelous season with that particular county, you know. And I also wasn't given that opportunity then, and someone came up. I got lucky. Someone took me to Somerset, decided, and funny enough, the individual that took me was in the gambling business, the bookmaking business, and he was basically, I think, chairman of Somerset County Cricket at the time, and took a gamble there, and that's it. So it goes to show you at times, it's not sometimes what you know and how good you are at times, but sometimes to be in that right environment where someone can be a much better spotter, if you may say.
So like many of the elite performers in the world, rejection and failure is woven into their life story. I don't think I've met anyone yet or researched anyone yet that's had this pristine path to mastery. Every one of them has had setbacks, criticism, injury, failure, but it's never the end of their story. In fact, it adds to the fuel that they need to take them through the adversity, to take them through the discipline, to take them through the hours of sacrifice that it takes to become a world-class performer. So they use this rejection and failure as motivational fuel rather than a dead end. And I think that's a powerful lesson for all of us. So Viv Richards and Andy Roberts, these two incredibly talented West Indian youngsters, had gone over to England, to Surrey, to try and get spotted. And there was a lot of head shaking at the back of the training nets where they were, and they got rejected. And you could hear from Viv how painful that was. But after struggling to impress at Surrey, Viv was then spotted by Len Creed, who was the vice chairman at Somerset County Cricket Club. As Viv mentions, he was a bookmaker that worked in Bath, had a bookmaking shop. I don't know how successful Len's shop was, but I can say that that was definitely the best gamble he ever made, to take Viv to Somerset, because in 1973, he started to play for a club in Bath and played in the second 11. And then the following year, he was offered a 2-year contract, moved to Taunton to share a house with, guess who? Ian Botham. And that's where that incredible story begins. He then made his first class debut for Somerset in 1974, and he had a man of the match appearance in the Benson and the Hedges Cup. So even at that early age, he was doing incredible things. And that confidence and that style that came through was evident from an early age when you listen to some of the comments around his early career. And I noticed on one of the Sky Sports documentaries that he'd spoken about this body language being absolutely critical. He grew up in a really tough suburb with lots of older boys who, you know, you could imagine were bullies with little Viv. So his way to handle himself was to stick his shoulders back, you know, put a bit of a strut on so people didn't mess. And in that particular documentary on Sky, he mentioned this analogy of considering himself a matador with this sort of balance of fearlessness and style. So you can picture that image in your head when you imagine Viv going out to bat. So I was really interested to ask Viv about the importance of his mindset. He seemed such a talent. So I wasn't expecting the conviction in his answer when he spoke about the role of his mindset.
It is the most crucial in my opinion, because everything that operates at the top here filters down into the body language, how you react, if you're not strong enough mentally, I doubt whether you'll be able to get certain things like the body moving. You've got to be prepared mentally, and if you're not, it is the main ingredients for the body to flow, for you to be able to express yourself, and it is all a transformation of what goes down here. And if you're thinking well enough, well, the feet is going to be moving well enough, and the body language is going to be different. So I guess the mental side of things, and regardless of whatever you are involved with, it is always the most, it's the engine room, if you may say, of operations and how you actually react to whatever competition you may be faced with.
So for Viv Richards then, his mindset was his engine room. What a brilliant analogy, the engine room of his performance. And I love the way I can see this video as I'm sitting here recording this, that he's leaning forward in his chair, he's sort of touching his head and leaning forward and talking about how his mindset sort of cascades down through his shoulders and down into this body language. But his mindset is the engine room of his performance. That's where it all begins. But he wasn't a Ferrari from the start, if we use that engine analogy. Despite his body language and his talent, his test debut in India in front of 80,000 screaming fans posed a very different threat for Viv. And this is where he shows that he is human after all, as he explains what that experience felt like.
I can remember, yes, my very first test match in Bangalore, India. And in those days, I guess, the attendance, they were phenomenal, you know, the crowds, there were so many things going on which just wasn't cricket at the time. Sometimes you even fear, rather than what the players had was to offer, was the noise, the firecrackers going off at times. I guess those days also there was some little crafty individuals who would be at the back of the side screen with mirrors and all that sort of stuff. Little things, you know, do get into mind. And I can remember when I made my first appearance coming off of some of these bamboo steps that you do get in India, there was no feeling in my legs. And I can remember I just fell straight to the bottom. And that's all to do with the fact that I just wasn't in control of my nerves. I just totally felt overawed, overpowered with everything that I was seeing around me, you know. And I guess when we spoke earlier about maybe the tough journeys, and it began, you know, it began then where you felt just out of total control. And I guess in my first match, you could see maybe why I didn't register into double figures. I got 4 and 3. Yeah, but it did take hold of me, and I didn't handle it the way I think one should have in my first test match. And these are the things that I guess the learning stages of how, if you are prepared to go the full journey, these are some of the journeys and the routes you have to go through, which is going to be tough. And that was a serious in a so-called baptism where the game was concerned. And I looked at it in so many different ways, like the thoughts would go through your mind. Am I really strong enough for being here? This is amazing. I never felt test match cricket would be like this. Are you prepared to go all the way? And all these questions were asked, and whether you want to continue or not.
So this theme again, we've got the idea of the young boy failing in his first Ireland game and that humiliation that came with it. We've got the trip to England where he tried to make his way and got rejected, and how he overcame that. And now we've got the talented young man making his test debut for the West Indies in this incredibly intimidating arena with 80,000 people. And, you know, for those of you who don't really follow cricket, you know, imagine a baseball batsman with behind the pitcher's arm, there's somebody with a mirror reflecting the sun into the batsman's eyes. So it's trying to put you off. So it's not just the cricket, it's the wider context that Viv's having to put up with, and the nerves. It's so inspirational to think that Viv Richards, one of the greatest and most confident sportsmen of all time, fell down the stairs with jelly legs on his debut. I love that idea. He couldn't feel his legs. He was so nervous. And Viv speaks honestly about that journey. But this isn't just a cricketing rite of passage. This is a personal battle against those demons and those doubts. And he would definitely need the support of his teammates to help to bolster him. And that's exactly what he got.
You need to have individuals who you trust on the team. There were some senior pros, like even Clive Lloyd. You had people like Keith Boyce, you know, who was at SX10 in England. So we knew each other, and we would exchange various views. And Van Burnholder, who I had respected a hell of a lot because of his knowledge of the game itself, having been there before me, would have seen the journeys that people would have been through. And I roomed with him at the time. So we discussed a lot of stuff, and you need someone, a little pat every now and again on the back, regardless of how confident you may feel at times. But certainly I didn't feel that. I felt a little bit below par. And having that individual, someone who can pat you on the shoulder and keep encouraging you and letting you believe, come on, man, this is only the very first match, and, you know, blah, blah, things can get better, you know, if you are prepared to work harder. And I did that. I just decided, hey, Viv, you're here. This is what you would have dreamt of years back. And you cannot afford to disappoint your dreams and the position that you're in at this particular stage. And decided to work harder, to continue to have that trust and faith in what got me there in the very first place. You know, you have to go back in order to regroup and get your act together. And having those consoling individuals around you played a huge part, helped me to basically prolong and to try and continue the journey.
So another few key insights here that not only is handling pressure a team sport, really, you know, everyone has self-doubts, and the best coaches, the best business leaders, the best captains in sport will understand that social dynamic and that, you know, inner frailty that people will have under pressure on debuts and during challenging times, and they'll support them because everyone has the doubt. So that's the first thing. And the second thing here is, as we see Viv starting to take these steps up at every point in that journey that he talks about, there's the same doubt. So actually the life lesson is to learn to back yourself in adversity. Learn to have that confidence when you're being stretched, when you're being tested. And Viv's strategy for that is absolutely brilliant. We need to look back, not sort of look ourselves in the mirror and say we're going to be amazing and have that sort of hollow, you know, affirmation, but actually to look back at our successes and say, what got me here? You know, what style of play, what strengths, what super strengths have I got? What past successes have I got to lean on? Because that's the evidence. That isn't some woolly dream. That is the evidence that's in my bank account of confidence that I need to rely on when I'm feeling low or feeling like I'm, you know, under pressure. So that's a potent combination of strengths and past successes that are the key to leveraging our future. And we also, you know, heard that a really important point that Viv had got that backing of his teammates and his captain. That gave him that combination of his own realization, his own sort of reinforcement, and the mentors around him gave him that mental gear change so that his engine could then start spinning forward positively. And like great performers, he bounced back really quickly and scored 192 in his next game in Delhi. So the demons were definitely banished to the shadows, at least for a while. So clearly Viv had developed a new set of mental skills which allowed him to sustain his dominance for many years. For someone who had doubts, like all of us, I wondered how he controlled his mind and his mannerisms to maintain that incredible presence on the pitch. And this is what he said.
I've always felt present plays a huge part in whatever you're doing. You may get a guy in front of a CEO in front of his the people who he's in control of, and they can know whether you are not that confident, and with that people take liberties when you're not in control. And I just felt that it was an opportunity for me to just express how I felt as a person. You know, I've always, even when I was much smaller, it's the same sort of stuff, that confidence, you know, even surfing a softball match or a rubberball game, you know. And I never ever planned anything. What I've always planned for sure was the fact that sometimes you try and ostracize yourself as much as possible from the individual who just got out. Because sometimes you have some individuals who would be wanting to tell you exactly why they got out. And I wanted to try and work that out for myself, because I would have seen, taken a little look to see exactly what's happening. So I felt so which meant that I waited for him to disappear and I'll creep in somewhere. And I just felt at a time you needed to be in control of what you were doing. It's 11 against two who would be out there. So I've got to have a presence. I've got to feel that I'm in control of my faculties. And that's one way in terms of doing it. Making you are in such a relaxed state. Your breathing, I think, is so important, because you hear all this stuff about maybe take a couple of deep breaths and you... And all that stuff while I'm coming in, you cannot see that. But I've got butterflies like everyone else inside. But how well are you going to be in control of that? And just walking to the crease and taking some deep breaths while I'm there, you know, and makes you look cool. And what I think also did help, having my chewing gum, that was also so important. You know, it's it plays a huge part in that whole preparation stuff, preparing you for what's going to be in the middle, you know. So it wasn't anything that's planned. It's just the fact that I had a fair idea of how much I wanted to be in control, because that's what presence is all about when you're a batsman. As I said, you're outnumbered. 11 guys out there who all, some are saying some stuff to you, and you are outnumbered. So you got to feel that your presence itself would be the 12th man.
So again, a brilliant insight inside one of the most cool and confident performers ever. He's talking about puffing up this presence to almost drown out the intensity of the opposition. And there were two of his team batting and 11 in the opposition, so he felt more dominant than them. And just as he forced his shoulders back in the schoolyard from those bullies in the early years, he was giving off this air of supreme confidence and composure, even though he didn't feel it inside. And I think that's the key point here. He says, I get butterflies in my stomach like everybody else. So just like that book, Feel the Fear and Do It Anyway, you know, these champions have this ability to keep moving forward. And I also love that idea of him not listening to the whinging teammate that's coming out off the pitch, having made a mistake and ended his innings. It's like he was the CEO of his own business and he wanted to sit separately and walk out separately so he didn't get contaminated by the other person's negativity. He wanted to see the game for himself. He wanted to assess the match conditions for himself. So I guess the business analogy for us might be if some of you are going for a job interview, for example, and you're sitting in the waiting room and you're waiting your turn, and some of the people that have already been in are sort of sitting around you and said, oh, they're really ferocious. You know, the questions they're asking are really personal and I wasn't prepared for it. That's not going to help you. So sitting somewhere quietly to compose yourself and get ready to deliver your best performance, whether you swagger in like Viv Richards and have that chewing gum chattering away, you know, is another thing. Viv definitely didn't nibble nervously like a rabbit on a carrot, but much more like a cowboy rolling the tobacco around his mouth as he swings the saloon doors open. So that ability for Viv to talk about how, remember in the early podcast episodes, we talked about handling pressure. Our brain wants to speed up. Our brain wants to take us back to safety, to the dressing room. So it speeds up our thinking. It speeds up our heart rate. It speeds up our mannerisms and we look really nervous. So Viv was consciously slowing down his breathing, slowing down his paces around the crease so that he gave off that air of calm. And, you know, this incredible aura that he had and this presence was really, really important. You can just imagine him kicking the saloon doors open, chewing slowly on his chewing gum, and Viv's in town and you better run for cover. So to keep that cowboy analogy going, he didn't wear a 10-gallon hat, but another part of his iconic identity was his maroon cloth cap. During an era where bowlers were starting to clock up 90 miles an hour deliveries, many batsmen were starting to rely on this protective technology, these fiberglass helmets that were helping the batsmen to stay safe. But for Viv, he wouldn't have traded his old maroon cap for the world, as you can hear now.
It was a pride. It was a sense of pride. I've always felt representing my country. I can remember the very first time that I was given my maroon cap in India. You know, I went to bed and every night I would go in front of the mirror and have a little look and see whether it fits or not. And in those days, it used to be the woolly type cap, and a cap that you could preserve, you know, not like the modern day cap, which sometimes is here today, gone tomorrow. And that cap had a lasting effect. And how you felt about representing your country. And maybe those days you never quite had the technology as you have today. To me, I felt it was rather heavy, and to put on a grill, it totally would have put me in disarray, because these are some of the stuff which I also appreciate as well. The fact of being comfortable while you're at the crease. You know, it's all about comfortable, your tie pad, how well it fits into to your flannels, and making sure that if you're looking to come forward, that the typer didn't impede maybe you doing that, you know. So all those little things were on your mind, you know. So the helmet didn't quite fit in terms of the comfort that you want to be, or the presence you would have at the crease.
So for Viv, he would never have worn one of these heavy, clunky helmets. He wanted this comfortable West Indies maroon cloth cap, which was so iconic for Viv. But it was also a powerful unifying symbol of the numerous islands which made up the West Indies team. For many years, there was tension around politics and selection, with the bigger islands carrying more of the power. But there are a few key episodes which galvanised this disparate group of talented individuals into one of the most iconic teams of all time. It was a 5-0 whitewash in Australia in 1975, which offered the team a choice of a test of character. Would they let their diversity and difference fragment them into cliques with conflict? Or would they use this adversity to build a stronger bond? In the 1975 World Cup, Viv Richards played a starring role. Not with the bat, but in a tense game at Lord's with Australia, Viv ran out not one, not two, but three of the Australian star players and helped his team to lift the amazing trophy, the World Cup. And this taste of success gave the team belief, but they couldn't be complacent. There were negative forces which would also pull their team together through this period. On the 1976 tour of England, the England captain at the time, Tony Greig, said that after the West Indies had been beaten so convincingly in Australia, that he and his team were going to make the West Indies grovel. This was the emotional spark that galvanised the West Indies team yet further as they recorded a dominant win. And they maintained this dominance and went on to win their consecutive World Cup win in 1979 against England, with Viv Richards top scoring with 138 not out. The West Indies were everyone's favourite team, and Viv Richards was their talisman. Great teams don't win once and relax. They have this insatiable desire to keep improving and keep winning. They challenge each other to learn and improve, and they use both success and setbacks alike to keep fueling their determination. I was really keen to hear Viv's view on what it was like to be part of that amazing West Indies team and what he thinks the characteristics of great teams are.
The best teams share a common goal. That goal itself, we are good enough. How well can we prolong what we are doing? Because at the end of the day, it brings a serious amount of enjoyment. Because this is why I think you are there. And for you to get the success, you know, you must have a certain amount of camaraderie. I've always put it in a much harsher way. It's like being in the bunkers and you are in war. You know, and there's a lot of things coming over your head, and sometimes you got to stay down. All got to stay down in a bit in order for you to survive, so you can actually have a fire. And this is what it's all about, that team itself and what it represents, and being in that environment. We are going to accomplish this. And when you see, and what I think does help, when you would have had an avenue early about what can be accomplished collectively, it is amazing how much harder you work. Because being at the very top, it's not about maybe being there for a particular time, but there is something that you're representing and something you'd like to represent for a long time. Because when you do it for one period, bang, and get knocked off, no one listens to you. It's about that legacy that's created. And when you create that legacy, it's amazing what people want to find out. How was that achieved? And these are some of the things. We all in the bunkers together. We all gonna take our rap together the same way. a success. It is a crucial part in any performance.
So just like the Chicago Bulls or the Man United team that had those dynasties of success, the West Indies team were an incredible and formidable team with swashbuckling, devastating, destructive batsmen and horrifyingly quick fast bowlers who scared the living daylights out of every batsman around the world. So that combination was pretty lethal for around a decade. And Viv Richards scored 8,500 runs in 121 test matches at an average of just over 50 with 24 centuries. As a captain, he won 27 out of the 50 test matches and lost just 8. He also scored nearly 7,000 runs in one-day internationals and more than 36,000 runs in first-class cricket. To achieve what Viv achieved over nearly 20 years, you can't rely solely on natural talent. You have to be street smart and adapt to different conditions all around the world. So I wanted to get inside Viv's mindset a little bit deeper about what happens when it isn't your day. And his insight was really fascinating.
There's always ways and means of winning. You can win ugly. There are times you're going to win pretty. There are times you have to graft and get to your total, which you wouldn't like. Sometimes your natural, whatever flair may take a back seat. It's about situations at the time in the game. You yourself reading the game enough, knowing what are the things that are required, whether or not you are in the right position to do that. These are the stuff that comes in your mind, and making sure that you respond to what's presently faced in front of you. There are situations where you're going to be feeling, wow, this is the way I'd like to do it. This is the way I love, enjoy doing it. This is the way my style is attractive and blah, 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 blah. But there are times you have to, and I put it in a very simple manner. There are times when you're driving your car, you get to the traffic lights. When it comes up red, you gotta stop, isn't it? Because you know if you cross that road with the red being on, someone has been given the opportunity, the green, to go. Could be a serious, not unless you're a mad person, could be a serious collision. And that is where you can stop, think for a little while. And when you get on the straight, you know, I've always believed in that. When you get on the straight, then you start to implement putting your feet down, hoping that you stick with it with the normal mileage that's in that particular zone. And it's the same sort of a philosophy you can apply to what you're doing professionally, you know. And I see that you stop again, go get over that particular period, so you can do the stuff which you enjoy, and you're gonna have that performing. You're gonna have that period where an individual may be pretty good on that day, and being good on that day doesn't mean that you're gonna try and blast your way out of it. That sometimes you gotta basically creep your way out of it. And by doing it, you go back to the basic things which will put you in the zone, accomplishing, winning. You may not like it, but at the end of the day, it's sometimes the professional thing to do.
So again, a fascinating insight. This is not somebody who's so naturally talented that he just plays well when everything's going his way. This is a serial winner. This is somebody who learns to win in lots of different conditions. And you have to find a way to win on that particular day so that you can win more consistently. So Viv was known as the Master Blaster. You know, his confidence, his dominance, his destruction of bowlers was unmatched. But we don't often consider his patience and his discipline. So he was calculated, not chaotic, in his demolition of bowlers. And his analogy to follow the rules of the road comes from that strict upbringing that we mentioned at the start of the podcast. So maybe our businesses or your industry at the moment is on go slow. Maybe there's a red light. So we can't completely break it and you know, do something rash. Otherwise, there'll be a smash, as Viv mentioned. We've got to wait. We've got to be patient until the lights turn green. And then when the markets and the opportunities open up, that's when we can start to express ourselves again. So being a high performer like Viv Richards is all about spotting the timing of when to put your foot down and when to be more cautious and make sure you're still in the game so that you can win the game later in the day. In December 2002, Viv was chosen by Wisden as the greatest ODI batsman, the one-day international batsman of all time, as well as the third greatest test batsman of all time, behind Sir Don Bradman and Sachin Tendulkar. He is a true champion, and it's been an absolute pleasure to share these stories with you. As I mentioned, I've been experimenting with this mastermind format where we dive inside the mind of one of the champions. So I'd love your feedback if you could send me a note, whether you've enjoyed this or you prefer the style or you just like the change, to hello@sportingedge.com. Wherever you're listening to this podcast from today, let's keep our heads down until the time is right. And then, like Sir Vivian Richards, I hope you go out there and absolutely smash it out of the park. I'll be kicking off a conversation on LinkedIn over the next day or two, so please do join in and share your favourite parts of today's interview. And until next time on Inside the Mind of Champions, good luck.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Inside the Mind of Champions. Connect with Jeremy's LinkedIn, Twitter, and Instagram links in today's show notes to receive the latest insights from his work. If you'd like to get access to Sporting Edge's digital library or book Jeremy for a conference speech or webinar, then please visit www.sportingedge.com or email hello@sportingedge.com.